Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Tuesday, April 8, 2025. I am Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Anika Ellis-Baby, and we have got a packed show for you today. So let's dive in with our top headlines. The Middle Eastern and global markets plunge further over tariffs and oil prices. DFM chief very optimistic about continued IPO momentum in 2025. PGA Tour rejects Saudi's $1.5 billion offer to keep LIV Golf alive amid merger talks.
And let's jump into the very first story, which is like, it's a red story, I would say. But Middle Eastern and global markets have plunged further over tariffs and oil prices. So Gulf markets extended their losses on Monday. It's a confusion that a lot of people don't know about, that some markets are open on Sunday, especially Saudi Tadawul, EGX, because Sunday is a working day for those countries, Qatar and Kuwait also. So it reflected a global sell-off and plunging oil prices. The Dubai Financial Market Index fell sharply by 3.08% to 4,799. Talabat led the decline, which was recently IPO'd in December, dropping 9.42%. Keep in mind, 10% is the maximum that a stock is allowed to devalue. If it devalues more than exactly 10%, you stop trading that one.
Ooh.
So it nearly dropped 9.42%, while Emaar, Dubai's most traded stock, Emaar Properties, there's Emaar Development as well, but Emaar Properties specifically slipped 2.53% amid heightened investor concerns across the region.
In Abu Dhabi, the ADX retreated 2.59% to 8,949, pressured by a 4.9% fall in ADNOC Gas and a steep 9.9% drop in Alpha Dubai after its recent listing. Saudi Arabia's Tadawul saw a modest recovery, rising 1.05% to 11,194, following a sharp 6.7% plunge on Sunday.
And top Saudi losers included Baltic Investments, Arabic word, I was reading Baltic by mistake, but yeah, Batik Investments, which fell 9.8%. On the flip side, gains from the National Company for Learning and Education up 8.8%, and Kingdom Holding Company, which is owned and run by Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, it climbed 6.5%. They offered some relief for Saudi Tadawul market. Elsewhere, Egypt's EGX 30 dipped 0.61%, not a big fall, but at least it continued the red trend, extending its 3.3% loss from the previous session, which was on Sunday.
Qatar's QE index, on the other hand, edged down 0.35% to close at 9,766, while Kuwait's premier market fell 0.64% to 8,054. These drops followed significant declines of over 5.5% on Sunday, as regional markets continue to feel the pressure from oil's sharp slide below $60 per barrel.
And the White House losses highlight investor unease over oil volatility, fears of a global economic slowdown, and continued uncertainty in key sectors. Gulf economies, which rely heavily on energy revenue, are particularly vulnerable, triggering a wave of profit-taking and dragging down major regional indices.
Now, looking ahead, analysts expect continued volatility as markets digest oil price swings, global inflation signals, and potential shifts in OPEC plus policy. Investors may turn towards safer assets or defensive sectors while keeping a close eye on macroeconomic developments and geopolitical tensions impacting global trade and energy.
Also, in the morning today, Asian markets rebounded after a couple of days of bloodbath, literally. Meanwhile, U.S. President Donald Trump has said that if China doesn't go back on its retaliatory tariffs of 34% on U.S., which he put first, he will further slap 50% tariffs on them by April 9. So just to give you a small context, April 5 was the date when the universal 10% tariff was came into action.
Yeah.
That's base. So the new 0% in the U.S. economy is 10%. And on April 9, the reciprocal tariffs will kick in, which is tomorrow. And reciprocal tariffs means that if you're taxing them 34%, US will be taxing you 34% as well. But now China has come back, and US President Donald Trump. Obviously, businessman, never backs down, always fighting. He's like, I'll slap 50% more, no problem. Market's sliding, market's in red. S&P is down 6-7% overall in the past 2 days, continuing from Thursday, Friday. He doesn't care. He's like, sometimes you have to take medicine if you think you're sick. So this is kind of like his medicine working for the American economy.
You know, this reference that he did, yeah, of the medicine thing, it's a very haunting reminder for me, because I remember in, I forgot the year exactly, but in India's economy, when Narendra Modi introduced the demonetization scheme,
yeah,
and everyone was, you know, critiquing it, his response was something similar. Like, when children do something naughty, wouldn't the mother take the sweets and put it high up somewhere so that they don't access it? Something very similar. So,
yeah. I remember one example from Pakistan as well. When Imran Khan came into power, everyone was like, oh, what will he do? And the very first thing that he did was that whoever the government owes money to, I won't give it to them. And everyone was like, why? You owe it to them. And media was affected a lot, like thousands of people lost their jobs. Thankfully, not me, survived that crash of Pakistani media industry. But exactly the same idea. He was like, we need countermeasures, we need medicinal measures, we need to rectify the situation. I was like, how do you rectify a situation by not paying people the money that you guys owe? So it's the same thing, right? They have the same ideas. I remember very long ago, nearly in 2017, there was a piece on FT. Sorry, I may jumble the year. It's 2017, 2018, around that time. FT, there was a very nice piece on how Trump, Modi, and Imran Khan used the same narrative to come into power.
They do.
Make America great again, do. Naya Pakistan, and Swachh something Bharat.
Swachh Bharat, yeah, clean
something,
India. But
yeah,
that was just one of his programs. But 100%,
but there,
yeah,
was some.
The
slogan
ideology
he used
is always like, let's clean it up, let's make it better, yeah, let's. But
yeah, so yeah, three of people, make America great again, Naya Pakistan, like new Pakistan, and this Indian idea of like reigniting the economy, all of them were the same. It's a really interesting article. You can find it on FT if you want. It's still there. But yeah, let's move on to the next story, and it's also related to markets. So there's an event happening, EFG Hermes one-on-one, where Dubai's DFM, Dubai Financial Markets Chief Hamid Ali was there. And let's talk about it a little. Dubai's debt and capital markets are coming off a strong year. We saw Talabat, Lulu IPOs last year, and a lot of other IPOs. Spinneys IPO'd. So it was marked by a double-digit index growth, more than 10, and billions in bonds and Sukuk listings on Nasdaq Dubai were also seen. And the world's largest tech IPO was seen on DFM by Talabat. Despite global market turmoil, officials now remain bullish on the Emirates' growth prospects across various sectors.
Speaking at the EFG Hermes one-on-one conference, Hamid Ali, the CEO of DFM and Nasdaq Dubai, and Hadi Badri, CEO of the Dubai Economic Development Corporation, highlighted real estate, financial services, and emerging sectors like tech and virtual assets as key drivers of investor interest and market activity.
Keep in mind, Dubai raised 45 billion dirhams AED through 10 IPOs over the past 2 years, with subscriptions exceeding AED 1.2 trillion, that's 1.2 trillion dirhams. Around 137,000 new investors joined the DFM in 2023, 85% from outside the UAE. Hamid Ali says this international demand alone could have oversubscribed all recent IPOs.
Ali remains very optimistic about continued IPO momentum in 2025, with several new listings in the pipeline. The focus is on offering growth opportunities across private and public markets, while nurturing long-term relationships with companies beyond their IPOs, encouraging follow-on offerings and private placements as part of broader market participation.
And real estate and infrastructure still account for 30% of DFM's market cap. You know, Emaar Properties, Emaar Development. But Dubai's agenda is shifting. The strategy now targets growth sectors expected to produce future unicorns. Hamid Ali emphasized that oversubscription in recent IPOs shows appetite beyond traditional blue chip companies, again, Emaar, opening the door for wider market diversification.
Badri also stressed that Dubai aims for 8 sectors to each contribute at least 5% of GDP by 2033. These include logistics, tourism, virtual assets, health tech, and advanced manufacturing. He added, "If we bring the world's best talent, the smartest money will follow." Investor confidence, it seems, is only growing.
And PJ, next story. But yeah, DFM head saying this when markets are down, very important. Shows optimism, shows trust in your market, right?
100%.
And we know about Dubai. They're very stable.
Yes, and they also got the new zero of the US, so the 10%. That was all they got hit with from the US.
You see the global markets, everyone is talking about who will retaliate, who will not. China did. Taiwan, I was reading news in the morning. Taiwan said that we'll go on the negotiation table with Trump. France, a lot of European countries, they're like, we'll go and sit with him. But Trump, the very first foreign trip is to our region. Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Kuwait. Yes. These are the three countries that he named. I don't know if maybe last minute plan changes, he goes to other countries as well. But it's a very good chance for us to negotiate. We have a 10% base tariff, universal tariff over us. Maybe on the next 10%, we can have some negotiations.
100%.
Right?
But I think also what's especially pressuring for the UAE, for example, is that the UAE is a great place for like transshipment. So it ends up being the middle point for a lot of other countries to come in. So I think if any place they have to really focus on, it would be this point of like how tariffs are going to be calculated from here.
Yeah.
Especially with China.
Yeah. Because indirectly, we will be affected. That's like the opinion of every analyst you talk to. Because we buy a lot of stuff from China. China sends a lot of stuff here. So if they face pressure from somewhere, they will eventually raise the prices of other exports as well, which go to other countries.
Right.
So eventually, the whole world will be affected. And we will be affected as well. The only good sign is that we have CEPAs, which is Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreements. Very long name. So CEPAs is easier. the first one was signed with India. We have signed 26 by now, total.
Right.
So that allows us to do bilateral trade with every country. So with that, we have lesser tariffs with a lot of countries. Australia is the first country from their region to sign a bilateral trade agreement with any Middle Eastern country. They chose UAE. Cambodia, Colombia, we have so many CEPAs signed. So somehow, across the macroeconomic level, like the bigger level, the world level, we do trade like everyone does.
Yeah.
But because of CEPAs, we do individual trade with each country as well.
Yeah,
that way, somehow we survive.
100%.
Yeah.
The UAE has always been like a nice neutral ground, you know, essentially like the Switzerland of...
Yeah,
Middle
East.
So it's tricky. I feel like somewhere we're being wrestled into picking sides.
Yeah.
But I know that
they will always come
out strong, and
I've realized over the last 20 years that like time when I've seen the economy very closely, you see that UAE, Saudi Arabia, these countries always come out of these side pickings,
sticky situations,
very very easily. They're like, okay, no, we're not taking sides. Let's sit together and we'll be the mediators. So they somehow take the mediator.
They always take on the middle.
Room. Yeah. So, yeah, there's this thing that I was reading and I wrote it. And let's tell you this very important piece of information about the 2008 recession. And there is recession talks right now happening.
Yes.
As well. Billionaires have lost nearly $500 trillion in America only.
Unless you're Warren Buffett.
Yeah, unless you're Warren Buffett and very smart, the Oracle of Omaha. But as fears of a new recession grow after U.S. President Donald Trump's announcement of reciprocal tariffs, it's worth looking back at how the 2008 financial crisis impacted everyday people, especially in the Middle East.
Right.
According to a study which was published on Ivy Panda, the UAE's unemployment rate rose from 3.1% in 2007 to 4% in 2008 when the financial crisis hit, with massive layoffs in banking, construction, and tourism. So over 80% of the workforce were expats. Many had to leave overnight. The pain hit consumers hard. A Gulf News report from 2008 noted that food price inflation in the UAE surged by 27%. So if you were buying something for 100 dirhams, now it's going to be, if recession hits, 127 dirhams. Affecting everything from rice to cooking oil. In Saudi Arabia, inflation spiked to 5.35% by late 2007, the highest since at least 2005. A Reuters report also projected that prices of essential goods like rice and meat would increase by 20 to 30% in 2008 when the financial crisis hit. Meanwhile, Saudi stock market was down nearly 40% that year. According to a report by Gulf Research Center, consumer confidence plummeted and government projects slowed due to falling oil revenues. Saudi Arabia, Saudi Vision 2030, if recession hits, it's going to be a big problem for them. They're building so many things.
Yeah. Honestly, that any talk of the 2008 recession gets me very sad.
Yeah.
Because my in 2008, well, I was 8 years old. My father was a businessman in Dubai. And if I'm not wrong, 2008 was the year his alcoholism got super bad. So, like, it just makes me very sad. But I mean, I'm just wondering, the UAE has always been a very smart country.
Yeah.
And, like, the Middle East in general, the region has been very smart.
Yeah.
So are you telling me that after something like 2008 happened, we still don't have any...
That's the thing where SIPAs kick in. So
right. This
report, this whole report will do it as a story also. I was just reading it out, so you get the information. But SIPAs will save us, one. There's a very, very high chance that when Trump comes here, the tariffs will be renegotiated because UAE promised them $1.4 trillion over 10 years. Saudi Arabia, the talks are about $1 trillion for the 4 years of Trump's term. So if these guys actually live up to these promises, I don't think Trump will do that 10% extra. He will be like, okay, let's see, you're
discounts. Spending
with me, so I'll give you discounts. And I'm 100% sure, it's a very learned opinion over the years looking at Trump, that he will make deals. It's his idea of
this
making deals.
This is definitely
deals.
A way to begin a conversation.
Yeah.
You know?
So, and it's a very nice way. It's a very nice way to have an upper hand in the conversation. So he's very smart that way. We shouldn't say that because he's brought the world to in the red region in terms of markets and oil. But yeah, that's happening. We'll talk about it a lot more over the week because it's an ongoing story.
This is the big story.
Yeah. But let's go to the business of sports. One of the things that we've kept an eye on is PGA Tour merging with LIV Golf, which is a Saudi-backed project, Saudi PIF-backed. So the PGA Tour has rejected a $1.5 billion investment offer from Saudi Arabia's public investment fund. This was reported by Bloomberg, and then after everyone reported it, the deal would have kept LIV Golf operating independently. According to ESPN, the proposal also sought to name PIF Governor Yasir Al-Rumayyan as co-chairman of PGA Tour Enterprises alongside current chairman Joe Gorder.
This move marks a major setback in merger talks between the PGA Tour and the PIF. Although a framework agreement was signed in June 2023 to unify men's pro golf, tensions remain over structure. The PGA Tour favors one global tour, while the PIF wants LIV Golf to remain separate.
And LIV Golf has faced challenges in the US, including weak TV ratings, few sponsors, and an estimated $400 million loss outside the US last year. Despite PIF's $5 billion backing, the league has struggled to gain mainstream traction, even after signing stars like Brooks Koepka and Jon Rahm.
The PGA Tour, meanwhile, has secured its own $1.5 billion from $1.5 billion from Strategic Sports Group. This reduces pressure to accept the PIF's terms, especially with internal resistance to maintaining LIV as a full-fledged league. LIV's existence continues to divide players, fans, and industry insiders on the future of professional golf.
And talks are ongoing with mounting public and political interest. U.S. President Donald Trump reportedly met with both sides. He has Trump golf courses, so he has a kind of a stake in both PGA and LIV Golf. Still, a final agreement remains distant. The PGA Tour is proposing limited LIV-style team events in the fall rather than allowing the rival league to run independently alongside its schedule.
LIV Golf's new CEO, Scott O'Neill, says the league is not reliant on a merger for survival, but remains open to collaboration if it benefits the sport. The future of men's pro golf may ultimately depend on whether both parties can agree on a single tour or continue in parallel.
And recently, LIV Golf, we did two stories on it. They have partnered with Riyadh Air. So all the LIV Golf tournaments, you'll see Riyadh Air's branding. So they got some kind of a money injection. And also, they have signed with Fox Sports. So the US market will now be covered through Fox Sports for LIV Golf. They have big players. I remember when they launched, they took the number one player from the PGA Tour. And that was like the biggest. It's like taking LeBron James or Michael right. Jordan from NBA. Or Sachin Tendulkar from in the Indian team. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
But now, let's see. Merger talks are there.
Right.
The thing about it is the structure. The whole story is that Yasir Al-Rumayyan wants to become co-chairman. How will they operate independently, same tournament? So it's going to be a long, long, long conversation before something finalizes.
Just need some sportsmanship spirit.
Yeah. That's the thing. Very nicely said.
Okay, and that's a wrap for today. Thank you for tuning in to the Smashy Business Show. Make sure you follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.5 million monthly listeners. We're trying to reach the sweet number of 2 million. So if you're listening to it and if you like it, share it with your friends and family and anyone else who will be interested in this.
The stock market is going down, but our listeners don't have to.
Yeah. We'll always keep growing with you guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day. We'll see you on Wednesday. Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye.